Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why shut, won't you talk, see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Well, it's Karen Cataline, and you're listening to Spouting Off Live right now here on WSMN 1590 and and 95.3 FM in Nashua, New Hampshire, the great live free or die state. It's a funny thing. I have an old friend. I hate calling him an old friend, but he is indeed an old friend. And when it rains, it pours with him. When I talked to him once, I talked to him two or three times in a week. His name is Ted Harvey. He is a former state senator in the state of Colorado. He has been a political activist for a long time, but what is even greater is that he runs an organization called DefeatThePresident.org. Oh, Tom Amenta. I am sorry. Let me go back because Ted Harvey is next hour, is next segment. Boy, I think I need to take a powder. Should I take a powder? I'm confused. Forgive me. We have Tom Amenta. Ted is totally different than Tom, and he is our very first guest. He is enlisted against his family's wishes in the United States Army. He did on his 18th birthday. Following his 5 years as a member of the 75th Ranger Regiment, including two combat tours in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. What better guest to have on and to talk about this atrocity being played out in Afghanistan? My apologies for introducing the wrong person. Tom Amenta, thank you so much for joining us here on Spouting Off.
Karen, thank you so much for having me. I heard Ted, and I'm like, wait a minute, did I call in at the wrong? Like, you have that panic moment. You're like, oh, no, did I screw this up? I also will say that I worked in radio for 4 years when I was also in college at the University of Illinois getting my degree in political science. So I've done exactly what you just did, and I promise you it's, like, normal. So I'm all good with it.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know what?
If, Ted, I hope that's fun.
Exactly. But, you know, yeah, and that's one of the great joys of live talk radio. When there are snafus, you just have to roll with it and say, oh, my bad. I hate that expression. Yep. Oh, I screwed up. I'll get it right. And then you move on. It's kind of like, I don't know how old you are. You may be very young, but there's an old show called Your Show of Shows. It was before my time, actually, where they did live TV sketches. Even Saturday Night Live wasn't exactly live. I guess it was in the old days, you know, and they tape a lot of stuff. But to do it live is another story entirely.
Absolutely.
Now we got to talk about the really serious stuff, and I've already gone to work ranting about it. The Taliban is hailing victory with gunfire, as this is an article after last U.S. troops leave Afghanistan, but Americans aren't out of Afghanistan. What
correct.
Can you tell us that maybe we wouldn't know except for someone who's a military person? And thank you for your service, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. And also, again, thank you for having me. I think one of the things that I would say actually is way more of a one of the things that this administration did that it was just, in my opinion, not honest and was something that needs to be called out is they've used a lot of language similar to everyone who wants to get out, we will get out. Okay. Now, for a second, we know that we have confirmed at least 100 to 200 people that wanted to get out that didn't. So they're already there. But there's this next group of people that have not been advocated for and the story hasn't been told. And that is people with American passports or American green cards. The status of immediate family members were unknown and they fear to leave. This is someone I've had direct knowledge with. I can confirm this. I've spoken and messaged with the person I'm about ready to mention. And their concern and their freak out was they're an American passport holder, was born in Afghanistan, immigrated to the United States on a visa, became an American passport holder. They're an American citizen. But their 16-year-old brother who has no one but them, when they went back to Afghanistan for, doesn't have a visa yet. And so there was this very tense situation where we had to convince him that because he's immediate family and that he's the only person that boy has, that they can get through the gate and get on a plane and go home. And you have situations right now where you have passport holders or green card holders that have elderly parents that, because of the culture of Afghanistan, could be married to more than one woman and have kids with more than one spouse, which isn't our way, but that is their way. And so let's be fair to that. And this tremendous amount of stress and this tremendous amount of anguish and angst of, one, can they all come with me? Two, if they can't, I mean, how would you choose? I'm the oldest of four, okay? I don't have any kids, but I'm the oldest of four. And if I was the only person that one of my siblings had, especially when they were a child, like, how do you make that choice? That's impossible. And then to use this very vague phrasing as your get out of jail free card, I find it just, that's not right. It's not fair. It's wrong.
It is not right, Tom. We're talking to Tom Amenta. Let me ask you, am I right as a non-military person that, yeah, our troops are out because they went, they were pulled out first in order, which was the dumbest and most damaging thing to do, so that there would be no protection for the American citizens that are there. Are there any troops left? And we're just leaving U.S. citizens to be caught or killed or enslaved by the very regime that we've been fighting for the last 20 years, being told that we have to do that?
So I would break this out and say there was a severe tactical blunder to leave Bagram International Airfield in the middle of the night and to cede that control and to stop the logistics to the Afghan National Army. To the best of my knowledge, from what I understand, yes, when Major General Donahoe got on that plane a day ago, there are no, I want to emphasize to the best of my knowledge that there are no active American troops in the country. That place has been chaos, and I just feel like, that qualifier needs to be there. Now, do I think that they left the Americans to this fate that we're talking about? I think that really falls under, and from what I'm hearing, is what is the administration going to do in terms of this supposed humanitarian relief thing they're talking about, right? Like, if there's a plan to do something else,
they're going
to
trust the Taliban is what they're going to do.
Well, yeah. I mean, sorry. And if that bears out, then that's a huge problem. Like, that's a massive problem. I will say that through the network, there is a huge call out for people like me, even old crusty people like me. And at 40, I certainly qualify as old by military or contractor standards to accept
huh?
Government,
okay.
Hey, I just got a lot of miles on my knees, man. but there's a group that is, they need guards for humanitarian assistance, and they are willing to pay absurd amounts of money. Like, I've seen the job postings. I'm really happy with what I'm doing with this book, The 20-Year War, and everything in my life, but man, I'm not going to say I didn't kind of scratch my chin and go, before I remembered how bad my back is. So there's at least something going on. But even inside of that, Karen, like, why are we going to spend a boatload on these people? Why didn't we just do the job with the troops that we have, with the resources that we have, with the resources that we should have had? Because the thing that frustrates me so much about Afghanistan is, take away the should we or should we not be there for a moment. And let's accept that right now we have troops in Iraq. We have roughly 2,000. And the Biden administration 6 weeks ago committed to them staying there. We have 900 troops in Syria, which P.S. he had no idea they were there, at least did not acknowledge them publicly. And then
he doesn't know where he is. How does he know where they are? Sorry.
Well,
did I say that out loud?
Yeah. we've got troops on the Horn of Africa, which is where he's saying we've got to fight al-Shabaab. So this over the horizon capability, why does he think that's going to work in one spot where the other three places we're fighting terrorism, we have an actual boots on the ground presence? It's small, it's a minimal footprint, but it is there. And you know, I know the American people want us to leave, and I know that the danger to Americans in some of these places is much higher than, you know, Germany. We've been there since, you know, the end of World War II. Korea, the end of the Korean War. Okinawa, again, World War II. Like, there is a precedent here for American involvement to stay, to be a stabilizing force in the region long after the quote-unquote war is over. So it just feels like he's talking out of both sides of his mouth the entire time.
Yeah, that is certainly true. I don't even know where to begin. what?
It's a lot, isn't it?
What do you think of a time, see, again, for a non-military person like myself and maybe most of our listeners, we look at a government that basically handed over our own weapons to our enemies that we've been fighting, and then bringing other Afghanis who have not been fully vetted to America who hate America. And while they're doing that, as I said in my monologue, they're taking massive, drastic steps every day to disarm American citizens. There comes a point when you have to ask yourself, is this government on our side or our enemy's side? And it gives me no pleasure to ask that, but if we can't ask the question, we can't address the problem, can we?
Well, I want to go back. I'll ask that one, but I want to go back to something really, really quickly.
Because
you mentioned the Afghans that are coming in. There's a phrase in the military, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. Okay. And I do absolutely 100% agree that this administration needs to do absolutely everything in their power to vet. And if you're not sure on that vetting, slow down and keep them in one of these centers, whether they're in the UAE, whether they're in, or I'm sorry, Doha, Qatar, whether they're in Germany, where don't just bring them over. However, and this is something I really, really want your listeners to understand. Okay. A lot of these people that are there are friends of us veterans. True, honest friends. It's why veterans like myself and other people have moved heaven and earth to link up, to coordinate, to hear their plights, to get them to the right people, to work with NGOs from the farthest left to the farthest right, right up into the end of this of this withdrawal. There were people like me trying to help these people get out. Okay. Now, the administration owes the American people 100% crystal clear due diligence and to be transparent about it. But there is this, but for every one of, oh my gosh, are they terrorists? It's really important that the people that are vouching for the absolute overwhelming majority of these people are people like me. And it's not just a, it's not just of their papers. It's not just their, you know, their stuff. It's like, we have been trying to get some of these people into the United States on a, on an SIV visa for a decade. So,
but
I,
Tom,
I, I'm
let
concerned.
Me, let me ask for clarification here.
Okay.
Because this is what the crux of, well, of some of what's going on. If I'm even remotely right, that we have an administration, we have a whomever's, it's the people that direct Joe Biden, whomever they are. If I'm right that they have it in for America, which isn't all that hard to see, then the stories and reports I'm hearing about the good guys, both American and Afghani, being turned away and the bad guys being brought in. Case in point, the rapist who was found to be flown to this country, along with a whole lot of unvetted people being put in army bases all over this country. They could not see their way clear to hire commercial airlines to force commercial airlines to bring Afghanis here, but somehow unvetted rapists get in while people truly loyal to the United States do not. One last sentence, that's exactly what happened with Cubans. The left who are in control don't want freedom-loving anti-communist Cubans. They want communist Cubans.
Well, to your point, you mentioned the rapists. This is exactly why I don't understand why the administration is not slowing down and being sure. It's a fair question that if you cannot prove biometrically, if you can't do the paperwork, you can't prove all of that, that you're crystal clear that that the people that are leaving from the international, you know, staging areas and coming to the United States should be 100% vetted, crystal clear, no doubt. Yeah. You can hold the paperwork up. And if they're not there, then they need to be not brought to the United States until such a time as you can produce that. But my net point is that the 99%, that might be a little too high, but like the overwhelming majority of the people that are currently in those places that they are trying to get here have been vetted like
there
that.
There are good guys too. And we lied and betrayed them. We lied to them and betrayed them.
Yeah,
we got their loyalty and then we said, okay, you're on your own, right?
Oh, I mean, we've certainly done some of that in Afghanistan, I feel like, but we've also done that with the Kurds too, which is an entirely other story, which you could spin me up for a year on.
To have you back because we're about done. Unfortunately, we have to wrap this up.
Okay.
Tom Amenta, you said you're writing a book. Tell us about your book.
Yes, ma'am. It's called The 20-Year War. It can be found at 20yearwar.com. It is a photo. It's a coffee table book. It's 12 inches by 12 inches. It's a photo journal chronicling the stories of 71 American veterans. It's an absolutely gorgeous portrait of who they are. And then their story is told with what inspired them to serve, a brief sketch of their service, what their transition back to civilian life was like. And then most importantly, I think, and where I really think your listeners will be fascinated, what they're doing now. So you can see how these men and women that served our country have continued on and continue to serve the United States to make it the greatest country in the world.
Tom, it sounds terrific. Thank you so much for your service. We so appreciate it, and it was an enlightening segment. We really appreciate it for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, so now I'm going to, we're going to take a break, and we're going to have the Ted Harvey that I introduced to early, but Tom was terrific. We'll have Tom and Ted. We'll have Ted when we get back right after this.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Well, welcome back to Spouting Off. I'm your host, Karen Cataline. And one of the joys that I have is in talking to really fascinating people who have information that nobody else has. Thank you, Art, for that. Our guest is on the line. So let me just tell you, I have a new piece up at my website, KarenCataline.com. If you know how to spell my name, you can get to my website. Thank you for all the emails that I'm getting. I really welcome your emails if you don't feel comfortable calling, but you have feedback, opinions, disagreements, good, bad, ugly, I don't care. I really enjoy hearing from you, and you can email me at Karen@KarenCataline.com. Last name spelled KATALINE. Let's get right to our guest. We have a senior reporter for the Epoch Times. And if you have not heard of or started reading the Epoch Times, just apropos of what I was saying before about free speech, Epoch Times is one of those papers that is doing the heavy lifting, doing the tough stuff that enormous numbers of publications now that have been co-opted in this country, like the New York Times and the Washington Post et al., are not doing. So he's a senior reporter, and he has information that is so very valuable to us. Nan Su, thank you so much for joining us here on Spouting Off on WSMN.
Oh, thank you, Karen, for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and I guess from a general standpoint, Nan, I would say most Americans feel like they've been gobsmacked. I don't know if you know that term. I think you do. Gobsmacked as to what is happening in this country and who are the powers that be that are trying to subjugate this country and twist it into something it was never meant to be. It's becoming clearer and clearer that China, which as Donald Trump says, China, who he has been warning about, has a great deal to do with the kind of subjugation, and it's a scary thing that's going on in this country and in Afghanistan. Could you enlighten us as to China's role in the current Afghani debacle and what we may watch, what we may see in the weeks and months to come?
Yes, China in the last few weeks has been really all the state-owned media from Chinese Communist regime has been engaged in all our war. Basically, every state-owned media in China has been all doing the propaganda to cash in the disastrous troop withdrawal of the United States from Afghanistan. So they are focused really on 3 points. Number one, the United States is a paper tiger. Just look at the Taliban soldiers. They hid in the cave. They only equipped with AK-47. And then they just defeated United States. So that's number one. And number two, which what they say is China is the leader of the war as a constructive force, while United States is a leader in the war as a destructive force. And number three, most important, that's what really what they're trying to build the image. They want to say that everyone building the alliance with the United States will eventually be abandoned, just like American allies in Afghanistan. And specifically, they put a lot of threat to Taiwan. They are trying to say, hey, Taiwan, you're going to be just abandoned by the United States, just as American allies in Afghanistan. So what they're really trying to do, see, it's a strategy, and most of Americans have not realized that China has been moving forward to the next strategic stage. They have realized, Beijing's leader have realized that the next 30 years of their economic development will not be able to basically like what they did in the last 20 years after their joining WTO, and they will not be able to depending on the United States and the Western world's market, because they wouldn't, we're not going to allow them to keep stealing from us anymore. So basically, they want to build its own global system, and the global system will basically consist of Southeast Asian countries, which, you know, Southeast Asia has already replaced Europe, become China's biggest trading partner right now already. And then countries in South America, countries in Central Asia, countries in Africa. So those countries, China can use their economic power to penetrate those countries. And they will help those countries to, like a Belt and Road project is just a typical example. And then China wants to, help those countries to develop their technology, like internet. And China already basically helped North Korea build its entire internet system. The problem is once China helped these countries build their internet, and all the technology from China actually had a bad backdoor. So China will, you know, basically control all the private information of, you know, all these leaders in these countries. They will be able to control this country. So China really wants to build its own world leadership that's able to challenge Americans' dominant power. So they will be. So this leadership image will you know, push more countries jump into the line, follow CCP's wagon.
It's just so scary, since Americans have stood against communism and tyranny for all of its existence. And now it seems to just be rolling over to the communists because we have so many in our midst. What, God forbid, but we must ask a question like this. With your familiarity and expertise on China, most Americans don't understand China at all, just by virtue of the geographic distance and the cultural differences. What befalls America if China gets what it wants?
Well, just look at the genocide that's taking place in Xinjiang area against the Uyghurs. And look at Hong Kong, after China, Chinese Communist regime adapted this so-called national security law in Hong Kong, look at how the former CEO of Apple Daily in Hong Kong was arrested, and then that newspaper was forced to close its business. So that's what's going to happen around the world if Chinese Communist regime actually have the way to control the world.
And Nan, we're talking to Nan Su, a senior reporter with the Epoch Times. I highly recommend you get a subscription to the Epoch Times and support free and open communication. I cannot remember what I was going to say. There's too many things. I wanted to ask you why don't we just jump to the chase here? If you could assist Americans, which, a lot of them, as I said, are gobsmacked in trying to figure out a way to stop this tyranny that is enveloping the entire Western world, what would you say would be the most effective thing? We don't have the seats of power right now, but what can Americans who don't have their heads in the sand do?
Well, I think we make ourselves be aware of a lot of infiltrations directly from China. I'll give you an example. A little bit more than a week ago, Department of Justice asked a newspaper, a Chinese language newspaper published here in the United States called Xingdao Daily, asked that newspaper to register as a foreign agent. Of course, that's a China's agent, meaning this is the agent of a Chinese Communist Party. But oddly, just in the last week, a lot of elected officials, including California Governor Gavin Newsom, they all went to congratulate Xingdao for its contribution and to celebrate the anniversary of Xingdao newspaper. Here in the United States, in California, it's a lot of elected officials. So I think that it's important that we are aware that the Chinese government has doing a lot of things to infiltrate the United States, especially for our government officials, as well as for our tech corporations. All these giant corporations, they still thinking technology may be able to change the world. They still thinking they are able to go to China to make a few bucks. So I think, it's all these things are really only helping the Chinese Communist regime become stronger and become bigger threat to the lifestyle of our next generation.
Of course. And to what do you attribute, I have my ideas, but to what do you attribute this complete rolling over of Americans to China, including huge, massive, big tech? You can talk to different people who see villains in different places. Talk to some people, they'll say it's radical Islamofascists. Talk to others, they'll say it's the communists, AOC and that bunch. Talk to more, it's a technocracy, and it's the big tech tyrants. It seems like everywhere you look today, there are a lot of tyrants trying to take control and are running amok. But my question is, from your perspective, who's calling the shots with all these people? Have they just, opened the gates to every tyrant known to man? Or is somebody either in control or going to clamp down on all of them? I know it's a very broad question, but what the heck?
Well, I think as we Americans, we can learn all this from our own history. In the past century, Americans dealing the communist regime in two completely different ways. One was the way that we dealt with Soviet Union. We tried to make that regime weaker and weaker every day. Eventually, changes started from within. And then there's a second way. It's a very odd way that how we deal with Chinese communist regime. That's another example. We basically, in the last 50 years, I say 50 years, I mean ever since Henry Kissinger visited Beijing, we just keep making that regime richer and stronger, and every day it's like dealing with a drug cartel. You gave them a big bag of cash. You say, hey, here's the money. Yeah. I mean, you have the money now. You don't have to do please stop the drug business. So is that worked? I mean, we're looking back. I think that we just paint a very rosy picture in our own mind, telling ourselves that the technology and investment from the Western world will change China. Well, the problem is, if you are Chinese, you live in China, you basically will hear the propaganda indoctrination every day. Yes. I mean, of every the whole day. Year, singly every day, they are telling you it's because the leadership of Chinese Communist Party that make the miracle economic change in China in the last 20 years. So our technology and investment that went to China only help Chinese Communist Party to confirm its own leadership, to confirm its one-party control system.
Yeah, such a valuable interview. I've got to ask you this. It sounds a little off the beaten track, but it's not. When this insane debacle of using the coronavirus to bully and intimidate Americans into doing what they want, which is pure authoritarianism, I remember seeing a video of Chinese citizens running around in masks. This was before it became commonplace to see people muzzling themselves in this country. And I thought to myself, even back then, China doesn't allow video of any of their citizens unless it's for a purpose. And then all of a sudden, we're seeing videos of Chinese citizens with masks on their face, and that's what was due to come here, which it did. Was that part of the propaganda, too, because coronavirus is being used for propaganda right here?
Well, I think it's very important for us to continuously pursue the origin of coronavirus. That investigation should never die. That need to be continued to actually find out where it is from.
Where it actually came from. You know, we only have a couple of seconds here left, and I want everybody to go to your work there at the Epoch Times. Tell everybody how they can find you, follow you, and hopefully subscribe to the Epoch Times, Nansu.
Yeah, it's Epoch Times. It's E-P-O-C-H, Epoch Times, or Epic Times, which is fine, too.
I call it Epic.
Epic Times is American way of calling it, and there are, we have a lot of people from working from Canadian side. They call it Epoch, so it's just a Canadian way or American way.
Yes. So just go there, and his name is Nansu, kind of like Sun Tzu, only different. Thank you, Nansu, for joining us. We so appreciate your time. When we come back, we will have another guest. I'll tell you about them in just a minute. Stay tuned here on WSMN. Welcome to Tuesday. Does it feel like Monday? It does to me. But boy, I don't know about you, but I sure did love my Labor Day weekend. Welcome to Spouting Off and hello, Nashua, New Hampshire. Karen Cataline, I'm your host for Spouting Off. And Spouting Off is a good thing. It means that you speak you don't censor yourself. Most people don't try to hurt other people. So watching what you say is one thing. But today, people watch what they say to the point of fear. of retaliation for saying what's on their mind. We don't do that here. We encourage you to call in and speak up. The number here, by the way, if you'd like to participate on this Tuesday, Monday, is 603-816-1590. That's 603-816-1590. And boy, it is nice to have a holiday weekend. I do remember I date myself when holidays were the actual days they were supposed to be instead of having everything changed on the calendar so we can have a three-day weekend. But on Labor Day, it's great to have a three-day weekend. My husband and I went on a road trip and picked up a beautiful little window for our front door. Took 3 hours up and 3 hours back. I'm actually so impressed with that little antique store in Texas. I'm going to have her on the radio to talk about running a very small business in a small town under extraordinary circumstances. I think people who do that and have continued to put one foot in front of the other, you heard the news. I was fascinated by that news. Restaurant owners still cannot get people to work because the government is offering incentives for them not to work. Gee, why would they want to do that? Now the incentives are ending. It could be too little, too late. Many, many, many restaurants, as you know, in your neck of the woods, have closed because a socialist communist government, yes, that's what we are trying to ward off and fight against, always wants to make people dependent on government with crumbs so that when the time comes, they can bully and intimidate people by telling them, well, you're not going to get your crumbs unless you do as we're told, as you're told. We're already seeing some of that bullying and intimidation. Usually they offer the candy with the velvet glove and the iron fist comes later. Now we're seeing both simultaneously. The candy is being offered in one hand. Oh, we're going to give you $100 lottery. You could win $100 in a lottery, or we'll give you a lottery ticket for which the odds are millions and millions to one. Just take this injection of unknown chemical substances, gene therapy, mRNA. I don't care what it is. This is the same government that's been lying to you since 15 days to flatten the curve, and they're still lying. Nevertheless, Labor Day weekend. What do most people do on Labor Day weekend? Some of them, many of them, especially all throughout Texas, I love it, and all over the country, the long-held tradition is to go for a drive, to go on a day trip, to drive 2, 3, 4, 5 hours away, maybe stay overnight in a nice little bed and breakfast. They're wonderful ones around New Hampshire. And enjoy an environment that is different from your own, but that you could drive up and back. I may have mentioned to you that I was enjoying a program on television that drew out the history, really, the history of the automobile from Henry Ford all the way up to Lee Iacocca and beyond. And it just never occurred to me because I never used to look at life, every aspect of life, through the eyes of politics. But now everything is politics. I wish it weren't. And that's why we love having vacations so we can turn off the news for a couple of days. God knows what happens when we do, but you know what? Life keeps going on. So taking a vacation is a really important thing. Nevertheless, the whole history of the automobile is indicative of social, cultural changes and, frankly, manipulation. Now, I don't know about how it started, but when the advent of the automobile and Henry Ford and all of that, it changed the way Americans lived. And that was patently clear from Americans living down on the farm and not being able to go into the city except for the long trek to sell their harvest in the city. And then people could move around. There was much more mobility, and people could live where they want, live in the suburbs. That was the advent of the suburbs, the automobile. Not just Henry Ford, but as the automobile got more and more powerful and unbelievably popular, and the car culture that we had, enabled people to be infinitely more mobile. And I was talking to my husband on this long car trip about how I still to this day am very nostalgic and have warm and fuzzy feelings, just like a lot of guys do. And everybody loves cars. If guys want to get a chick, you know, they had to have a nice car, right? And when I first got my learner's permit, I was so enchanted with the ability to move around, get around, and do stuff, you know, and do stuff and go where I wanted to go. As I say, the advent of the automobile made it possible for people to live in the suburbs. And yeah, people could live in the city, but they didn't have to. And they didn't have to live in rural areas down on the farm either. Now we have the reverse of that, where leftists and communists who are trying to manipulate the way we live, how we live, every aspect of our life, they want us to live on top of each other in cities and to get rid of our cars. When you think about it, there's more to that than so-called climate change, which is nonsense. You don't change. I think anybody who looks at the whole climate change thing, they're beginning to see how similar it is to the hyperbolic manipulation and fear-mongering that's been done with the coronavirus and done by the same people. Gee, what a coincidence. And so it occurred to me that the left hates cars. The left has always hated cars. When they promise to spend money for roads and bridges, they never spend the money on roads and bridges. They just know that's what Americans want. But in fact, they continue to let roads and bridges deteriorate and decay because they want people on top of each other, depending on public transportation, depending on the government for their every need, just like people do much more in the city. So how about that? I think it is reasonable to say that the left hates cars because they hate other people's freedom. They don't want you going where you want to go, doing what you want to do when you want to do it. That's what they resent. Anybody who wants to manipulate, control, and subjugate a population doesn't want them going wherever they want. Restricting their mobility, restricting their access to free assembly, which we have watched happen with the coronavirus, restricting, telling people to stay home. Have you wondered why it was that the left was so in love with making other people lock down and stay home and never go out? Glorifying doing everything in your home, everything that you can, from working to playing to getting a home gym. That's one among the few businesses that have actually done well in the last 2 years-ish, and that is home gyms and anything that you can get by or do at home, because they don't want you going out. They don't want you mobile. Mobility equals freedom. Without mobility, you have no freedom. When I was a social worker, I remember how desperate senior citizens were to hold on to their ability to drive, because they knew the minute they weren't able to drive anymore, they were dependent on other people. Well, the minute Americans give up their homes for rentals, they can't own their own property or give up their cars and they're dependent on public transportation. It's no accident that New York City is certainly not a car town. Funny thing, when I lived in the New York City area, I always had a car. I lived in Weehawken, New Jersey, and I parked my car right on the street. And one of the reasons that I moved to Weehawken is so that I could have a car, because I just wasn't oriented towards living life in a cement jungle where you could never get out, drive your own car, and go where you want to go. You see, my Colorado roots have held me in good stead. So I think the resentment that the left has for other people's freedom is at the root of much of this, because they know they can't subjugate a populace that loves and reveres liberty. And they detest liberty. How about that? Here's another liberty that they detest, and that's the liberty of religious liberty and religious pluralism. You don't have to like other people's religion, but we live in a country where we don't have a state-sponsored religion, and that has allowed many religions to flourish in this country, not just the popular ones, but all kinds of religions, and that's a good thing. There's a marketplace. Or if you choose not to have any religion or faith at all, that is also a choice. You're not going to be burned at the stake. Now we have a persecuted population of people who are of faith. The reason I bring that up partly is because today is the first day of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. When I was a kid, we always took that day off along with Yom Kippur. And I'm working today because I think it's so important to speak out on the beginning of the Jewish New Year. I know it's a little bit of a renegade of me. I will take Yom Kippur off. I won't be working that day out of respect for the Day of Atonement. But I guess I just thought it was important to be here and speak out and embrace not only religious freedom, but mobility and all of our rights in the Bill of Rights, particularly the 5 in the First Amendment. They're first for a reason, because without those rights of free speech, freedom of the press, freedom to assemble, freedom to petition our government of grievances, and all those things. I always forget one. And they're always, it's always a different one. It's never a speech that I forget, but I know there's one there somewhere that I always forget. Nevertheless, there are 5 pillars of the First Amendment alone, and it's first for a reason, because without those, we can't be free. If we are not free to express ourselves as we see fit, to think our own thoughts, to believe as we wish, freedom of religion, that might have been the one, then we do not have liberty. We have the illusion of liberty. And right now, it seems like just by listening to the news, we're living in a pretend world. And we're getting messages that we are not allowed to consider that it's a pretend world. We must believe what they tell us. Since when was that ever American, huh? When was it American to be told, you have to believe us? No, it is very American to rebel. It is very American to say, well, let me hear what you have to say and what you think, and I'll take it under advisement, and then I'll make my own decision. I'm master of my own fate. And I get to decide how I live. I didn't even get a chance to talk about the abortion law in Texas that is driving the left bananas. They worship, sorry to say this, I don't really like saying this, but they worship death. They do. They are more worked up about people not being able to get an abortion in Texas, which is a perfectly decent state law. The state has a right to make that decision, to set that rule in their own state. They are more worked up about that than they are about Americans, the travesty of Americans being left to die or be held hostage or tortured, God forbid, in Afghanistan. They've got twisted moral, their moral compass is broken. I gotta take a break. Karen Cataline, I'm your host on Spouting Off. What a pleasure and a privilege it is to exercise my First Amendment freedoms here on 1590 AM WSMN Nashua, New Hampshire.